Ayana is actually traveling, but she pre-recorded this talk, this homily for us. And so we will be seeing her on video. And then after that, Kelly is going to be sharing some words.
Hello, my name is Ayana Gaines, and my pronouns are she, her, and hers. I am a worship associate here at Chalice. I wanted to talk to you today about Thanksgiving and the real story behind the holiday. It is probably fair to say that as adults, we don't think much about the origins of the holiday. We are usually too concerned about the food and who will show up to eat it. But as young children, we are told the story of the first Thanksgiving, often in school. As a parent, I always felt that the story of the first Thanksgiving was indoctrination, a mere introduction to the myth-making that stood in for actual historical instruction. I'm a bit of a downer that way. I remember my boys coming home from school in kindergarten and in first grade with the obligatory handprint turkeys, which I loved. What I didn't love was the coloring pages showing pilgrims and images of the standard generic Indian. You know, the one with the feather headband and the brown leather outfits with fringe. Very generic, very wrong. If we are honest with ourselves, we will admit that the story of the first Thanksgiving doesn't seem to quite match with the truth of later encounters between white colonizers and the indigenous peoples. When we hear tales of the Battle of the Little Bighorn, learn about the Trail of Tears, or find out that the Disney movie Pocahontas is a little on the fiction side, we began to realize that there is more to the story of Thanksgiving. So what was the first Thanksgiving like? Well, for one thing, there was no turkey served, and no one wore feathered headdresses. And the pilgrims initially did not invite the local Indian tribe. The Wampanoag, whose name means people of the first light in their native language, can trace their ancestry back at least 10,000 years to southeastern Massachusetts. By the time the pilgrims landed, the tribe had nearly been wiped out by a mysterious disease. The pilgrims were not the first visitors to the area, despite what we commonly believe. Europeans had visited the area before the pilgrims had, and the Wampanoag had fought and traded with these explorers, dating back to 1524. In 1614, an Indian named Squanto was kidnapped and sold into slavery in Spain. He spent 7 years trying to get back to his homeland. During his absence, his people were nearly wiped out. By the time Squanto returned, two-thirds of his people had been killed by something called the Great Dying, which was thought to have been caused by an illness carried by the Europeans. In 1620, the English people aboard the Mayflower landed near Plymouth. The Wampanoag observed as women and children got off the boats, and they realized that this was no exploratory mission, but people looking for a place to settle. The pilgrims struggled through their first winter, dying of cold, starvation, and disease. However, this didn't stop them from raiding the graves of the deceased in the deserted indigenous village of Pawtuxet and settling it for themselves. The leader of the Wampanoag did not trust the Europeans, but he noticed that they had weapons that would be more powerful against their sworn enemies, the Narragansett tribe. In the spring of 1621, with the help of Squanto, who spoke English, he made strategic first contact with the Europeans. By the fall, the pilgrims, thanks in part to the Wampanoag teaching them how to plant beans and squash, had their first harvest of crops. To celebrate, the pilgrims had a harvest feast. The Wampanoag were not invited. In fact, the tribe only showed up after they heard gunshots go off, and they came running, fearing that they were once again going to be going to war. When they were told that it was a meal held on Thanksgiving for a successful harvest, they were relieved, and they joined in, bringing deer to share with the Europeans. This impromptu feast is what our national holiday is supposedly celebrating. However, the indigenous peoples of the East Coast, including the Wampanoag, view Thanksgiving as a national day of mourning. Why? Well, the pilgrims thought themselves superior to the tribe and eventually killed off many Wampanoag in battle, enslaved survivors, and forced the tribe to convert to Christianity or die. This is rather ironic, given the fact that the pilgrims came to the New World for the right to worship as they chose. As a result, Thanksgiving is seen by many Indigenous people as the beginning of the end. Thanksgiving does not signify friendship and fellowship. It instead means disease, servitude, and death, not to mention suppressed rituals, stolen lands, and stolen children. The Day of Mourning has been commemorated since 1970. The group United American Indians of New England, or UAINE, organizes events centered around the Day of Mourning. Indigenous peoples and their allies gather in Plymouth to remember and to protest. For them, Thanksgiving represents, quote, the genocide of millions of Native people, the theft of Native lands, and the erasure of Native cultures, end quote. It is not a holiday of celebration. Something that is not always mentioned is that Unitarian Universalist churches play a part in making Thanksgiving what it is today. Many of the congregations that the Pilgrims established in the New World eventually became Unitarian or Universalist. In addition, Sarah Josepha Hale, the woman who campaigned presidents for 17 years to make Thanksgiving a national holiday, was active in Unitarian circles. In 2016, the Unitarian Universalist Association tried to rectify their past mistakes by passing a business resolution wherein they suggested that they not only engage in educating all UU churches and camps about the truth of Thanksgiving, but also work with local tribes in activism. While this resolution has some merit, it centers the European experience. You may be wondering if there is a way that colonizers, people who live here now, can reconcile the history of Thanksgiving with the myth. One thing that we non-Indigenous people can do is decolonize Thanksgiving. What is decolonization? It is, in essence, stripping away the rosy, romantic gloss that colonizers such as those from Europe have laid upon history and dismantling the systems that oppress non-European cultures. You may be wondering if you can decolonize Thanksgiving. You can. There are some steps that you can take to return Thanksgiving back to the roots of the meaning of giving thanks, to combat erasure and honor Indigenous peoples. For example, learn the truth about the holiday and tell your family the truth as well. There is material appropriate for children that does not romanticize Indigenous people or the holiday. Consider doing a land acknowledgement before your meal. There are websites that can help you determine which tribes inhabited or currently inhabit the land where your residence now resides. Don't just recite empty words, however. Make your land an acknowledgement meaningful by committing yourself to working for the rights of Indigenous peoples. Learn about the humanity and contemporary living existence of Indigenous people. American culture has made them into stereotypes, into ancient beings that no longer exist. We can rewrite what Thanksgiving means to us. We can reintegrate Thanksgiving and ensure that the whole story is told. Thank you for listening.
The words we speak are often profound, full of meaning, and come from deep within our heart center. I know many of us do not take the words that slip from our tongue lightly. They are not ethers in the wind, but much more lasting and permanent. We are UUs, and we care deeply. But sometimes words alone are not enough. There are times when action is called upon to bring our words to life, to show that we are able to truly make the change that we wish to see in this world. So in this vein, we at Chalice have realized the vital need to go beyond speaking the land acknowledgments that we share during our services. A land acknowledgment is a formal statement that recognizes Indigenous people as the traditional stewards of the land. In the past, we at Chalice have started our services acknowledging how we respect, recognize, and honor the Chumash people, whose unceded territory we meet on each and every week. This has been a beautiful way to start our journey towards repairing a very broken history. And yet, we would also like to recognize that we can do more. we can find ways to put these words into action. Taking our congregation beyond land acknowledgments has been a vision of the Building Beloved Community Advocates, or BBCA, here at Chalice, and I am a member of this. Part of our mission at BBCA is to find ways we can promote the creation of a beloved community within Chalice, one that fosters a loving, multicultural community absent of racism and other oppressions. We are always looking for ways to give this work greater depth and authenticity. In this spirit, we are working on finding opportunities for our congregation to take action, whether it's donating to organizations such as Wishtoyo, or standing together with our Indigenous friends, striking environmental change, or even just reading about and supporting local Chumash artists and leaders. And yes, we at Chalice recognize that the soles of our feet, as well as the bones of this building, stand upon land that was once home to Indigenous peoples. We pay our deepest respects to the Chumash tribe, who once lived within these hills and looked out upon these waters. And we at Chalice aim to do more. Through tangible actions, such as supporting Native-led efforts, providing educational resources for the congregation, and collecting monetary donations, we strive to honor the initial stewards of this land and work towards regaining what was lost for so many. And I'll admit, writing new words and finding more authentic ways of being is hard work. And it's imperfect work, but it's necessary work. As a white woman, I am always unlearning the whitewash history I was taught in the 80s and 90s and trying to relearn from people of color who experienced the detrimental effects of white colonization. I am reading, I am writing, I am trying my best to make change with what I learn. I am trying to be the light. My hope is that we realize the work of repairing the broken land beneath our feet is not done just by acknowledging who we stole it from. This isn't an issue we come to face once a year on Thanksgiving because we as white people are reminded that the story of Thanksgiving isn't the whole one. This is history that still lives and breathes through the descendants of a people who saw their world, their land, their living become nothing but smoke and ruin. They deserve far more than just words. If anyone is interested in joining me and the BBCA to come up with tangible ways to honor the Indigenous lands we reside on, please feel free to come talk to me. And to learn more about how you can support Native Nations, including how to go beyond land acknowledgments, there's a great website called the Native Governance Center, and it's at nativegov.org.